యమునా తీరవనచారియ యమునా తీరవనచారియ జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ బిహారీ గోపీ జన వల్లభ గిరివరధారీ జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ బిహారీ గోపీ జన వల్లభ గిరివరధారీ జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ బిహారీ గోపీ జన వల్లభ గిరివరధారీ జయ హరినామ సంకీర్తన్ కీ జయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. హరే కృష్ణ. వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 11 క్యాంటో 12 చాప్టర్ 2 ఎంటైటిల్డ్ సింప్టమ్స్ ఆఫ్ కలియుగ, శ్లోక నంబర్ 34 and 35 ఫర్ డిస్కషన్ టుడే. శ్లోకా నంబర్ 34, కైండ్లీ రిపీట్ ఆఫ్టర్ మీ.
దివ్యాబ్దానాం సహస్రాంతే చతుర్థే తు పునః కృతం భవిష్యతి తదా నృణాం మనాత్మ ప్రకాశకం. దివ్యాబ్దానాం సహస్రాంతే చతుర్థే తు పునః కృతం భవిష్యతి తదా నృణాం మనాత్మ ప్రకాశకం. దివ్యాబ్దానాం సహస్రాంతే చతుర్థే తు పునః కృతం భవిష్యతి తదా నృణాం మనాత్మ ప్రకాశకం.
Word to word translation and the purport of the next verse by the humble disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Divya of the demigods, Abdanam years, Sahasra of 1,000, Ante at the end, Chaturthe in the fourth age, that is Kali, Tu and punaha again kritam the satya yuga bhavishyati will be tada then
nrinam of men. Manaha, the minds. Atma prakashakam, self-luminous. Translation. After the 1000 celestial years of Kali Yuga, the Satya Yuga will manifest again. And at that time, the minds of all men will become self-effulgent. Text number 35. Ityesha manavo vamsho yatha sankhyayate bhuvi tatha vitshudra vipranam tasta geya yuge yuge. Translation. Thus, I have described the royal dynasty of Manu as it is known on this earth. One can similarly study the history of the Vaishyas, Shudras and the Brahmanas living in the various ages. Just as the dynasty of kings includes exalted and insignificant, virtuous and wicked monarchs, varieties of human character are found in the intellectual, commercial and laboring orders of society.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, welcome all the devotees to the Srimad Bhagavatam class today morning. Lot of descriptions of Kali Yuga we have read. And in today's shloka it is mentioned that there are so many varieties. Some are wicked, some are kind-hearted, some are nasty, some are encouraging, some are happy, some are discouraging. And in this way, there are many varieties. So we'll see a few examples about these varieties of people. So amongst the topmost section of the society, because they are the topmost, the responsibility is also the highest. One time I remember we were on a yatra, and in one particular room there were some senior devotees. They had spent around 25 years in the Brahmacharya ashram. And then because of something, on one particular day that senior devotee was not in that room. And then that room was allotted to another junior devotee. And that night, that junior devotee slept on the bed of that senior devotee. And this was observed by another senior devotee. So the senior devotee told me, "Who is sleeping there on the bed?" I said, "I don't know." And he said, in Marathi he said, "Evadha pan vyavaharik nahi banayala paije. Don't become so efficient. Don't become so much into just getting a good sleep. There is something called as respect. There is something called as etiquette. And this senior devotee has spent 25 years in the ashram. How can somebody sleep on the same bed as this senior devotee?" So I understood. The senior devotee was talking to me, was really disturbed. And later he asked me to confirm who it was. So I understood that our seniors, the place where they sit,
the objects that they use, even something like the bed on which they sleep, is to be respected. Tadiyanam samarchanam. So tadiya means something that belongs to an exalted person. In that particular shloka where Lord Shiva is talking to Parvati Devi, tadiya word refers to the Supreme Lord, Supreme Lords, those in connection with the Supreme Lord. So anybody who is senior to us, in fact any Vaishnava for that matter, we have to be extremely careful. So the higher we go, higher is the responsibility on us to maintain etiquette. So if people look up to us, if people respect us, and if we do not follow etiquette, it's not just we who are getting harmed, but it is also those of us who look up to us and who learn from us. So, knowledge flows from top to bottom. Water flows from top to bottom. All pure things, water is flowing top to bottom. Similarly, from those who are highly learned, from those who are highly realized, realizations flow. You have to pull water by a pump from a lower level to a higher level. But if you allow water to just flow, it flows in the downward direction. Similarly, if we are at a lower situation, then knowledge and realizations, blessings, automatically flow in the lower direction. You don't have to do much about it. So, we'll discuss a few examples about how somebody in the higher rungs of society did not behave properly, and then what happened. So, Lord Balaramji, whose appearance day is tomorrow, taking some reference from Lord Balaram, we'll discuss how Lord Balaram, who had equal affection for the Pandavas and the Kauravas, refused to take part in the battle. And he went on a pilgrimage, not wanting to take sides. So while on the pilgrimage, he visits the western side of Bharatvarsha, where the Saraswati river flows, and he visits all the holy places there, and then he also goes to the eastern side where Naimisharanya is there. And when he reaches Naimisharanya, there is a huge assembly of sages there who have gathered together to learn about the higher truths of life from an exalted sage whom they have chosen amongst themselves as the most knowledgeable, as the most learned. And his name is Sri Romaharshana. So this person has been selected by that assembly of sages to be a worthy person to guide them, to be a worthy person to enlighten them. And he's sitting on the asan, and Lord Balaram, along with his entourage, reaches that place. Every single sage who's sitting there, they get up from their place, they offer respects to Lord Balaram, and they offer a seat to Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram, as he sits, he notices Romaharshan, who has been seen as the most exalted, as the most wise person. In fact, the most respectable person, because he has given a higher seat than everyone else. He somehow failed to stand up. He failed to bow down to Lord Balaram. And he failed even to join his palms to welcome Lord Balaram. The least that he could do was at least join his palms, namaste, offer obeisances, bow down, he is not doing. He did not even get up from his seat. So Lord Balaram, even though he has accepted an asan, he gets up from his asan and he is saying, Rishir Bhagavato Bhutva Shishya Aditya Bahunicha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has appeared in the form of a sage. Rishir Bhagavato Bhutva, Vyasa Rishi, Shishya. And this person, he is the Shishya of Vyasa Rishi. He is not a Shishya of an ordinary person. So, he has a great spiritual lineage. His Guru Maharaj is Vyasa Rishi. Aditya Bahunicha. Not just he has a lineage like that, but he is also himself a learned scholar. He has studied a lot. what all he has studied? Sa itihasa puranani dharma shastrani sarvashah. So he has read the dharma shastras, what is right, what is wrong, what is yogya, what is ayogya. He has studied the itihasas, not just the law books, but the examples of the law books. Somebody who followed the law, somebody who behaved yogya, what was the reward given to him? Somebody who behaved ayogya, what was the punishment given to him? So itihasas he has read, puranas he has read. But he says, what has all this knowledge, learning and a great spiritual lineage resulted in him? Adantasya, avinitasya. He has not yet controlled himself and he is not yet humble. Avinitasya. Vritha pandita maninaha. He is pretentiously claiming himself to be a pandit. Vritha. He is not a pandit. And that's why he deserves to be punished. Why? Because such a person who is pretending to be a great scholar, who is pretending to be on a higher seat, but he has not yet developed those qualities which are supposed to come by the advancement of knowledge. Knowledge is supposed to have some effect on him. That is not happening. So he says, I have appeared in this world to kill these kind of pretentious religious people. So Lord Krishna, if you see, he killed many kshatriyas, kings who were atrocious, and so many times the description of the wars is with lot of blood flowing and lot of violence that is happening, animals, humans, so much violence. And in that Mahabharata war, which is like a huge violence, Lord Balaram, he just stayed away from that. But here, an exalted sage who is sitting on the Vyasasan, and actually he is a representative of Vyas Rishi in its closest form, but Lord Balaram takes one kusha grass and he touches it to the neck of the sadhu, and the sadhu is killed just by a small kusha grass. And this is how Lord Balaram, whose appearance day is tomorrow, is teaching all of us. If we are on an exalted position, and if people look up to us and people respect us, not only should we have knowledge, but we should also have good etiquette, and we should have good behavior, and we should never ever, most of all, fail to offer respects to those who are seniors to us. In some small respect, in some small way, some people may see us as seniors. That is their goodness, that is their good quality. But if we really want to be careful, then we should always look up also and look at so many spiritual masters who are above us and never ever cause any trouble to them. We also have one more example of a person in the highest order in society, but he did not behave properly. All of us know that the Kula Guru of the Yadu Vansha is Gargacharya, Garga Rishi. And Garga Rishi had a son, his name was Gargya. So one time there was a talk between Gargya and his brother-in-law. And his brother-in-law passed a comment on Gargya. He said, you are a eunuch. So now they are related to each other, brother-in-law and this person. So he probably didn't mind it much coming from his brother-in-law. But this conversation was overheard by some of the Yadavas. And they had a hearty laugh. Usually when somebody laughs on somebody, passes a comment on somebody, unless you are really, really self-controlled, it's difficult to arrest that laughter. So the Yadavas laughed. And seeing this, Gargya, he was so put off, he was so angry on the Yadavas. Interestingly, he is not unhappy, he is not angry at the person who made that insult, because he has a relationship. But not understanding the relationship between two people, when a third person laughs on it, then see what happens. So this Gargya became so much insulted. He went to south direction, and in the south direction he worshipped Lord Shiva very intensely for 12 years. For 12 years he is worshipping Lord Shiva, by doing tapasya. And you know what he ate for those 12 years? He ate powdered iron, loha. Loha ka churna banaya aur loha ka churna kha rahe the. Basically it is tapasya. Eating something that has no taste and that cannot be eaten. So he ate powdered iron and for 12 years he was worshipping Lord Shiva with lot of tapasya. And finally from Lord Shiva he got a benediction that he can create a son that will create terror in the hearts of the Yadavas. Then he returned back to the north. And one time there was a Yavana king who did not have a child. So he requested Gargya. Seems he had a benediction, so this worked out for child. So Gargya Rishi, he fathered a child in that Yavana king's wife. And that son, it is mentioned by the blessings of Lord Shiva, had the ferocity, had the destructive power of Lord Shiva in his aspect as Mahakal. Today also in Ujjain, there is one of the Jyotirlingas called Mahakal. He is time destroyer. So this Kal Yavan who was born had the ferocity of Mahakal. And one time when this Kal Yavan grew up, he asked Narad Muni, who are the most powerful people on this earth? And Narad Muni spoke the truth. It is the Yadavas. And Kal Yavan in this way, when Jarasandha, he attacked for the 18th time, then on the other side, Kal Yavan also attacked in his attempt to fulfill the prophecy of Lord Shiva, the desire of Gargya Rishi, and you know, he has come here to attack Lord Krishna. Of course, we know what happened. Lord Krishna himself did not kill Kal Yavan. He got Kal Yavan killed through the agency of Muchukunda. So in this way, we see how sometimes some rishi who is on the highest position, who is a very respectable person, he gets put off by some small misbehavior. So much so that with his power, he wants to eliminate that dynasty. He wants to kill that dynasty. He's creating a son that will create terror in the hearts of the Yadavas. Who are the Yadavas? The Yadavas are those who are very dear to the Supreme Lord Krishna. In the Gita, after Lord Krishna shows his universal form, when Arjun is asking for forgiveness from Lord Krishna, in one of his shlokas he says, oh, please forgive me. I have sometimes, in a very offhanded way, I addressed you as a Yadav because you belong to the Yadu Vansh. So in an offhanded way, I say, oh, you are just a Yadav. He's begging forgiveness. But these rishis and munis, they never ask for forgiveness. This is almost like the small boy Sringi cursing Parikshit Maharaj. For a small apparent mistake, Sringi cursed the exalted Parikshit Maharaj who was guarding the whole planet against the influence of Kali. And he threatened Kali by looking into his eyes. And Kali, such a powerful person, started trembling in the presence of Parikshit Maharaj. And this exalted Parikshit Maharaj was simply cursed on a small mistake just by Sringi. So in this way we see how when people have lot of power, but they do not have proper discrimination, then they can cause so much damage in this world. One time we were discussing with a childhood friend that, you know, what is exactly a gentleman? And he asked me this question. How do you define a gentleman? Well, there are different definitions. One definition that I offer to him is, a gentleman is somebody who contributes more to this world than he takes. All of us here, not that we'll only contribute, all of us will take from this world. And probably most of the world today is taking more, you know, astronomically higher. We're just taking, grabbing, snatching, sometimes from people, sometimes from living entities around us, and sometimes from Mother Nature.
which is consuming so much oxygen through our industries, through our oil refineries. Many times when I'm passing by these big factories, I see on a chimney there is a fire. And I asked, what is this? So they say, when you are refining oil, there are some poisonous gases that come out, and those poisonous gases cannot be used for any good purpose. It's good that you burn them. So any oil refinery, if you pass by, then you will see there are some chimneys and there is some fire above, and it's just going on for years and years and years and years. And so much exhaust from the vehicles, and so many things can be spoken about, but we're just taking away so much, and how much are we contributing? How much are we giving back? So much energy has been consumed for no good reason. So then this person asked me, what all do we take from this world? I told him, we consume water, we consume food, we consume oxygen. And then I told him, we also many times consume satisfaction of those who are staying around us. Sometimes we snatch away, we grab peace from the lives of those who are staying around us. So one thing is, somebody has a pair of kartals and I want kartals. So I just snatch it from him and then use it for my program. But what if in that whole snatching business, I not only snatched away the kartal, but I also snatched away that devotee's peace of mind. He had his kartal in front of him. Suddenly one person comes, snatches it away, does not even offer a good explanation, does not even ask for a permission. Of course, kartals are going to be used for a class, for a Bhagavatam class. So it's going to be used for a good purpose. There's no doubt about it. A devotee will not use anything for the wrong purpose. But when you are using something for the right purpose, what is the way in which you used it? So in this way, sometimes amongst a group of devotees, amongst a community of devotees, when we are all staying together, sometimes we forget the value of those who are staying around us. And we may not be snatching food from each other because our resources are there. We may not be snatching money because our resources are there. Krishna has given us enough. But many times by our behavior, by our words, by our improper conduct, we might be snatching away satisfaction. We might be snatching away peace from devotees' lives, especially those who are close to us. So many times I've seen how ordinary people are so gentlemanly when they are behaving with strangers. You're riding on a bus and there is somebody in front of you. You do not dare to push him. You do not dare to step on his shoes. And you mention to him, sir, ma'am, can you please step aside? I need to go. My stop is the next stop. Even if you're riding by a cab, if you don't have change, if the cab driver does not have a change and he's short of some money, and you say, oh, well, don't worry, keep the change. But that same person, when he comes home, is talking to his family members, and suppose in some interaction, something goes wrong. Some small thing, which is negligible. It was negligible a few moments back in your interactions with the outside world, whom you didn't know. But the same interactions, same kind of interactions, similar, when they happen at home or in the ashram, It is a struggle. It is a conscious struggle for us to have a better etiquette standard, if not the same, with those who are close to us, with those who are always around us. So in this way, we may not be snatching physical objects, but we many times snatch away satisfaction, we many times snatch away peace of mind from those who are around us. So I was talking to him, if an ordinary person, by his misconduct, snatches away peace, snatches away happiness, snatches away smile. Can you snatch a smile from somebody's face? Can you put your hand and snatch away smile? You don't need to put your hand there. Somebody is sitting around you and he is really having a pleasant mood right now. Just look around at him and give him a very rude, arrogant look. Just stare at him in a very uncomfortable way. And you will see how if he has a smile on his face, suddenly that smile vanishes. And he's thinking, why is he looking at me like this? Why is he giving me a stare like this? So in this way,
As devotees, we might be snatching away a lot of satisfaction, peace and smiles from people's faces and people's minds. So if an ordinary person can do all this snatching business, can you imagine, the more higher you go, the more you are seen as a leader, how much greater is our responsibility to not ever get into this snatching business? How much careful we have to be with our looks? How much careful we have to be with our gestures on the face? How much careful we have to be with our words? How much careful we have to be with our countenance? The way we stand, the way we walk. Should it be arrogant? Should it be friendly? By our behavior, by our stance, by our posture, are we giving a signal to people, I am unapproachable? Or by our behavior, by our stance, the way we look, the way we talk, are we appearing to be friendly and approachable? We have not talked yet, but I am approachable. Would you want to talk to me? But what if we have a strange conception that the more unapproachable you make yourself to others, the more exalted you become? So unfortunately, because we have all come from this highly competitive world where you grab a sandwich, you don't eat a sandwich, you grab a bite, you don't relish the bite. Especially those who are seen as seniors, they have to be very careful, because the higher you go, greater is your responsibility. Putna was something like 8 miles tall when she grew up, when she exposed her original size. And after Lord Krishna killed her, she fell down. And when she fell down, it is mentioned, she flattened jungles. Entire jungles were flattened. Most of them were orchards that belonged to King Kamsa. Krishna killed her in such a way that she fell down on the fruit trees, on the orchards and jungles that belong to King Kamsa. He used her in that way. But the point is, so many jungles and so much nice land, so much fruits were flattened because of Putana. In geography, there is something called as a rain shadow region. So usually, when there is a tall mountain, it blocks the movement of clouds. And on one side of that tall mountain, there will be amazing rainfall. Because the clouds cannot travel, they hit against the mountain, there's a lot of rain that falls on one side. And what happens to the other side of the mountain? Just like we have a shadow, shadow means absence of light. The light cannot fall there. So similarly, this is called rain shadow region. What is rain shadow region? Rain cannot fall on that side. So very interestingly, there's a mountain in between. On this side, there is a lot of rain, and this side, there is rain shadow. Similarly, sometimes, the higher we go, the taller we become, we can become like that mountain which obstructs a general feeling of well-being, a general feeling of satisfaction, a general feeling of peace. And we can create a peace shadow region where we stay. We can create a well-being shadow region where we stay. We have to be very careful. Either we can be like a tall mountain which produces a well-being shadow region, or we can be tall like a cell phone tower. You are a tall cell phone tower. And the taller you are, because the cell phone tower is not opaque, is not solid, so light can pass through it. Light cannot pass through a mountain. So when you are a tall cell phone tower, you do not create a shadow region. And the taller is the cell phone tower, taller or wider is the reach, the range of the cell phone tower, and more people can connect to you first and through you to so many others. A cell phone tower with 100 meters height will be able to connect to 500 people. A cell phone tower with 200 meters height will be able to connect to 1000 people. A cell phone tower with 300 meters height, tall cell phone tower, it will be giving range to kilometers around radius. So all of us have to become tall, but we should not become tall like a mountain that produces a rain shadow region. We have to become tall like a cell phone tower, and we become transparent. And through us, so many people can connect to each other in a proper way. Having spoken about some people who did not actually behave properly, we'll also give a contrast about somebody who behaved properly and is also among the respectable parts of the society. This is the Rishi. This is amongst many. This is the spiritual master of the Devatas. This is Brihaspati. So one time it is mentioned, Indra, this is mentioned in Canto 6 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Indra is sitting on his throne. His beautiful wife, Shachi, she's sitting on his side. And they are accepting worship from so many living entities. There are the Urugas, there are Nagas, there are so many Gandharvas who are singing. The Vidyadharas are there, the Apsaras are dancing. It's a gala event. It's a huge mela. Everyone is happy and everyone is offering their gratitude to Indra because he is the king of all the Devatas. He is the representative of all the prime minister of the universal government. And as he is sitting there, as he is enjoying everything, somewhere there is a feeling, how expert is my administration that in my rulership everything is going good. And at that moment, the guru of all the Devatas, including Indra, appears there. And as he appears there, the Srimad Bhagavatam clearly mentions, Indra looked at him, he saw him come, but in a matter of a split second, he looked at the other scene where everyone is offering the respects to Indra. And this all happened in a split second. It's not a conscious thing. He looked at his guru, he neglected his guru, and then is looking at the whole event that is happening, absorbing all that glory that is being thrown at him. And he felt, maybe this is not the right way to treat your guru, right? I have to get up, I have to offer my respects, I have to bow down, and I have to offer all this glory to the right person whom it belongs to. His blessings, his wisdom, his guidance has caused me to rule properly. And as he again looks in the direction of his guru, his spiritual master Brihaspati is no longer there. He disappears from that place. He leaves that place. And Indra searches for him. He has realized his mistake and is searching for him. But Brihaspati is nowhere to be seen. Brihaspati is nowhere to be seen. He is untraceable. So why is Brihaspati untraceable? Because just like Krishna says, Ye yatha mam prapadyate. As you surrender to me, I reveal myself accordingly. In the 16th chapter, there is a shloka where Krishna mentions this roughly 16, 17, 18, 19, around that section. Where Krishna says that there are living entities in this world, those who have pride, darpa, those who have lust, kama, krodha, darpa, and all these undesirable qualities they have. And he says, mama para, para deheshu, atma para deheshu, says, pradvishanto abhyasuyakaha. Krishna says, and there are these personalities who have all these evil qualities, but not only that, they are envious of me, who am seated in their own hearts, and para deheshu means, I am also seated in my devotees' hearts. And pradvishanto, pra, dvesha, they have so much envy for me that they even deride, not just me, they deride my devotees and they also deride the Vedic scriptures. And they come up with faulty logic that ascribes faults to the Vedic scriptures. Now, Vedic scriptures are the breathing of the Narayan. How can there be any fault in the Vedic scriptures? So much authority is there in the Vedic scriptures, and as you go on doing research, conch shells are found to be pure. Cow dung has been found to be pure. Plants have life. Just 30, 40 years back, plants did not have life. So many things are evolving as time goes by, but the Vedic scriptures have stood the test of long period of time. In December 2017, all of us are aware of the Discovery Channel. A part of this Discovery Channel is called the Science Channel. And the Science Channel released a short video analyzing the bridge that stands between Rameshwaram and Lanka. And this short video had a geologist, Mr. Alan Lester, a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, and also another person, Ellen Argillen, a professor in the Department of Geosciences at Indiana University Northwest. So both of them are from a non-Vedic background and they are geologists at prestigious universities in America. And they did some research on the piece of rock that connects Rameshwaram and Setubandh and Lanka. And they found out that the sand that connects is not artificial sand. The foundation is very natural. And stones that have been kept there, they are not natural stones. They were not part of the original structure there. And these stones have been brought from another part and they have been lined up in a series and they have been made to connect the land of India and Lanka. But this video was never ever accepted in the Holy Land of India. It never ever gained prominence in the Holy Land of India. Why? Because there is so much attempt to discredit the Vedic scriptures, to make it appear that all this is myth. On the 5th of August, very soon, is the Bhumi Pujan of a very beautiful temple, shrine connected, dedicated to Lord Ramchandra. And in this country of India, there is so much opposition right here, right now, at this moment. For the official telecast of this ceremony, there is resistance to the most honorable Prime Minister of India attending this ceremony because India is supposed to be a secular state. So you cannot support any one particular culture, any one particular religion. But the point is, how can you neglect history? If the Rama Setu was built, how can you neglect history? Yeah, so it's not a religion. It's not something religious. History. This bridge was built by a person and this person was born. So we want to erect a shrine. So is it religion? It's a shrine. Here is Lord Ram, and we want to build a temple where we want to honor him, we want to worship him. So it's history, but history will be discredited in the name of myth or mythology. So, just recently yesterday evening I received a message saying that many times in the Vedic scriptures this mention is there of 33 koti devatas. The word that is used, koti, means crores, 100 lakhs. But then a very interesting explanation is given. It's not 33 crores. Koti, another meaning has come up, also means category. So, you know, this message sounds like a very nice message with all good intentions, but it discredits the Vedic scriptures. It is not anti-Vedic, it is bypassing the Vedic understanding. So one way of discrediting the Vedas is, the Vedas are nonsense, the Vedas are not proper, this fault and that fault. Another way is to give your own logical understanding to the Vedas, showing that your logic is much greater than the logic of the Vedas. And saying that actually it is not 33 crores of devatas. How can there be so many rulers? 33 crore rulers? How can there be so many? Actually, it is 33 categories. And what are these 33 categories? So all worked out. 12 Adityas, 8 Vasus, 11 Rudras, 1 Prajapati and 1 Indra. And in this long list, even Agni, the personality who offered the quiver, the unlimited quiver of arrows to Arjun when Khandava Prastha was burnt, the personality who offered chariot to Arjun, and the personality in Krishna Leela, in that particular Leela, who offered the Sudarshan Chakra to Lord Krishna, his name is not there. The Nagapatnis, when Lord Krishna is chastising Kaliya, the Nagapatnis in their prayers, they offer some silk cloth and some ornaments. So they also offer Kaustubha Mani to Krishna. But Kaustubha Mani is an eternal companion of the Supreme Lord. The Sudarshan Chakra is an eternal weapon of the Lord. But when Krishna appears in this way, then the Leela is that he gets back those objects. The Panchajanya conch shell of Lord Krishna is his eternal conch shell. But here, when he went to get his Guru's dead son from the ocean, then he killed a Panchajana demon and then he called Panchajanya conch shell. So similarly, he got Sudarshan Chakra from Agni. It belongs to him, but he got it back from him. So this Agni, the most worshipable person, Vayu is not there in that list. You don't have Vayu in the list of those 33 and you don't have Agni in the list of those 33. So all these kinds of things are happening. Somehow or the other, find faulty logic with the Vedic scriptures and in one sense, don't bury them, don't discredit them, but just keep them aside. हाँ ये अच्छी बातें हैं लेकिन गए गुजरे जमाने की बातें हैं अभी इसका कुछ मतलब नहीं है and probably they applied at a one particular point of time in the history but right now we have many other important things to do. We were reading fourth chapter of the Gita. 4.10 is Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha Manmaya Mam Upashrita Bahavo Jnana Tapasa Puta Madbhava Magataha. So here Lord Krishna is trying to encourage Arjun by saying, Bahavo Jnana Tapasa. Many, many people have been freed from Raga, Bhaya and Krodha. Attachment, fear and anger. And Bahavo Jnana Tapasa Puta Madbhava. Many, many purified people in the past have attained me by Jnana Tapasa. And if you see the Gita, then these two words are a combined word. It's not Jnana Tapasa. It's not two separate words. It's Jnana Tapasa. Means they are linked to each other. Now usually when we talk of tapasya, we feel tapasya is for the body. 17th chapter Krishna speaks about tapasya of speech. Anudvega karam vakyam. So there he mentions how there is tapasya for speech also. Tapasya for the tongue also. Similarly here it is mentioned, what is Jnana Tapasa? Sharira tapasya, you stand on your toes, your hands are raised, you are surrounded by fire, etc., etc. This is what Hiranyakashipu and many other Rakshasas did. But what is Jnana Tapasa? Jnana Tapasa is tapasya of knowledge, tapasya of intelligence. So now you wonder, what is tapasya of intelligence? The tapasya of intelligence mentioned by Srila Baldev Vidya Bhushan in his commentary to this particular shloka is that devotees, if we are serious about getting the Supreme Lord, then we all have to perform Jnana Tapasa. What is Jnana Tapasa? Jnana Tapasa is we have to tolerate the faulty logic, the faulty arguments, the faulty perspectives of people around us who try to discredit the Supreme Lord, who try to discredit the devotees, who try to discredit the Vedic scriptures. And staying in a society which is trying to discredit all of these, we have to have the proper attitude, the proper understanding, the proper perspective towards the Supreme Lord, the Vedic scriptures and His exalted devotees. How do you do that? If everyone around us is glorifying the Vedas and you are glorifying the Vedas, not a big thing. But in Kali Yuga, how do you protect yourself? It means we are all the more dependent on our acharyas, on our seniors who will give us the correct perspective, who will read books and who will tell us this is the way to understand the Supreme Lord. Please don't try to find out faults with the Supreme Lord. Please don't try to find out the faults with the scriptures, trying to analyze every small word of the scriptures and trying to give it newer and newer meanings. So this is the meaning of Jnana Tapasa. So Krishna is saying, those people who will perform this Jnana Tapasa, who will not come up with faulty arguments and fault, those will not fall prey to faulty arguments and faulty logic offered by people of this world, they will attend me. Manmaya mam upashrita. And how to do that? Don't have attachment for these people. Don't fear these people who will offer faulty arguments. And don't become envious of these people who will offer faulty arguments. Vita, raga, bhaya and krodha. Don't become angry at people who are offering faulty arguments. You stay calm. You become absorbed in Krishna. And you offer rebuttals. You offer intelligent arguments to destroy those faulty arguments. You become intelligent. You become strong. You worship Krishna with your intelligence, Krishna will empower you and offer fitting replies to all these faulty logic that is floating around. So, we were talking about reciprocation, how Krishna reciprocates. And that's why we are originally discussing about Brihaspati. Why did he disappear? Why did he disappear? He's simply reciprocating. He understands his Shishya is more interested in accepting glory from his followers than being a follower himself offering worship to his guru. At any given point of time, many of us could be having followers while maintaining our position as a follower to our seniors. So it depends on what we focus on. If we are focusing on our position as a leader and focusing on our followers and seeing if they are offering respects to us and neglecting our relationship with our seniors, being followers ourselves, we are in for trouble. That's what happened to Indra. But while leading others, while leading our followers, if we are focusing on our relationship with our seniors as a follower, then there is no trouble, there is a lot of glory. Why? Because even while leading others, you are fixed up in your position as a follower of your leader. And that's why you'll never ever deviate from the right path. And when you do not deviate from your right path, your followers will automatically not deviate from your path because they are loyal followers of you. So you are following your leader who is a proper follower and your followers are following their leader who is also trying to follow the proper leader. In this way, the parampara system is established. So why did Brihaspati vanish from that place? Brihaspati is simply reciprocating with his disciple's mood. The disciple does not want to glorify me. The disciple does not want to respect me. I am not Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram can give punishment. I am not Lord Balaram. I am a servant of Lord Balaram. I am not here to give punishments. I am here to enlighten. I am here to guide. I am here to bless. I am here to pass on the blessings of what I have received from the Guru Shishya Parampara. So I am not going to punish Indra. But what I can do is, I can simply reciprocate with him and I can simply vanish from here. Another reason why a spiritual master sometimes vanishes from his offensive disciple's life is to reduce the chances of the disciple to further offend him. So already when the disciple did not disrespect the spiritual master, did not respect the spiritual master, he understood. He does not have any more intentions of offering me respect. So now if I stay here, there will be another act of disobedience. There will be another act of disrespect. This will increase the offenses of this disciple. So sometimes when some senior devotees or when the spiritual master takes a step back from our lives, it is not a sign of his disinterest. We'll have to understand this. It is a sign of some breach in etiquette, some disrespect from our side. Why would the most merciful incarnation of the Supreme Lord, the Sevak Bhagavan, who has come here to serve the Supreme Lord and the Parampara, and who sees his disciples also as he has seva towards his disciples to guide them, why would he ever take a step back from some place? Only when he sees people there are not eager for him, and then there are so many others who are eager for him, so then it happens like that. So Brihaspati disappeared from that place only for one reason, that he saw the mood of Indra, and that's why he just went away from that place. And Indra searched for him in vain. He did not find Brihaspati. And so many disasters happened in Indra's life just because of this one small moment of neglect. So we have to be very careful. We don't do something that can really destroy our relationship with our Shiksha Gurus, with our Diksha Gurus, with our Vartma Pradarshak Gurus. One time Srila Prabhupada was approached by one of his disciples and he said, Prabhupada, I am filing for a divorce. In those days, Prabhupada had made it very clear that we don't do all those things, culture times at that time. So he said, okay, that's what he said. He didn't give a long reply. And this conversation was noticed by secretary, and the secretary said, Prabhupada, in your lectures, in your books, you have mentioned how we should never ever go for a divorce. And then now you have allowed this divorce. How did you do this? In a humble way, he's asking. So Prabhupada mentioned, actually when he came to me, he had already decided that he will go for a divorce. He was not asking me, more of he was informing me. So now he's already decided he's going for a divorce. He's going to go for a divorce. And I tell him, you cannot go for a divorce. I know him. He will still go for a divorce. And when he goes for a divorce, he will have the third offense against the holy name. He is contradicting the order of his spiritual master. So when he offends his spiritual master, what next? There is no hope for him. There is doom for him in his spiritual life. I wanted to save him from that offense. And that's why I allowed him for that, to save his spiritual life. Now somebody who does not understand these deep principles can question. Sometimes devotees question, how can you speak like this? How can you do like this? But if we really know the kind of things that are happening and the kind of responsibilities that are there, and if you know all the constraints that are there in which somebody has to operate, there are expectations of people, and then there are certain things that you are supposed to do, and then there are some unknown, you know, unspoken expectations of some people. So the higher you go, it is such a tightrope walk. How do you take a decision? How do you behave? How do you talk in such a way that every single person around you is satisfied? It's almost impossible. So there will be clashes. There will be questions. But if we are sincere, then we do not get agitated. We stay calm and we explain to the best extent possible within the constraints that are upon us, and we never ever disrespect our seniors. One time one devotee was explaining, he was listening to a katha by His Holiness Radha Govind Swami Maharaj. And Radha Govind Swami Maharaj was explaining, one disciple came to him and I honestly forget what was the topic, but then he said something to Maharaj. It was regarding something that he wanted to do, the disciple wanted to do. And Radha Govind Maharaj said, yes. And then they talked for some time on some another topic, and at the end, when the disciple is moving out, he again confirmed what he had asked in the beginning. So he said, so Maharaj, can I do this? And this was that first thing that he had asked, for which Maharaj had already said yes. And the disciple asked again. So, can I do this? Maharaj said no. So the disciple now, you know, he's questioning, he's thinking. Sometimes Maharaj says yes, sometimes Maharaj says no. Is he changing his opinion? What is going on? So then he asks, Maharaj, can I ask you a question? Yes. Previously when I said, then you said yes. Now when I ask you, you said no. And Maharaj looked at him and said, the first time when you came to my room, you informed me, I am going to do like this. So I said yes. Now you asked me, should I do this? So the answer is no. It means the spiritual master's opinion does not change. It is our mood that changes. Sometimes we want to inform somebody and sometimes we want to ask somebody. If we are willing to take the pain of asking and are willing to accept an answer which is not agreeable to us, if you are willing to have that tolerance, then we will get a true answer. Then we will get a right answer, the original answer. But if we do not want to take the pain of getting an answer that is not agreeable to us, then we will have to tolerate the trouble that comes after hearing an answer that is agreeable to us and then doing what we are supposed to do and then getting into a big mess. So that section of the Gita, 16th chapter, I was mentioning, you know, Krishna says how those people who are envious of me, those people who are envious of my devotees, and those people who are envious of the Vedic scriptures, I cast them into lower and lower species of life. Mudha janmani janmani, mam aprapya eva nivartande. Mudha janmani janmani. So he says, I cast them into lower species of life. So now the question is, why does Krishna cast such people into the lower species of life? You know why? Simply because he's reciprocating. They don't want to see the face of Krishna. They have anger for Krishna. They blaspheme the devotees of the Lord. They do not want the Vedic scriptures and the civilized life that comes along with Vedic scriptures, following the rules and regulations and the etiquette and the mannerisms and the culture that is present in a Vedic society. So Krishna says, alright, so you don't like me? Okay, you may not get me. You don't like my devotees? I'll send you to a place where there are no devotees, and you don't also like the culture that is there in the Vedic scriptures, where there is so much respect and etiquette and do's and don'ts. I'll send you to a place where there is no culture, there is no etiquette, there's a dog eat dog world. So even if you are envious of the Supreme Lord, what happened to Hiranyakashipu? Hiranyakashipu in one place says, Vishnu is the root of the entire cosmic manifestation. And how do you destroy a tree? You destroy a tree not by burning the tree, because the roots are there. Next year again the roots will give birth to a tree. You destroy a tree by cutting the roots of the tree. So I will destroy Vishnu. And once I destroy Vishnu, who is the root of the entire cosmic manifestation, I will destroy the cosmic manifestation. I will ruin all the culture. So in one sense, Hiranyakashipu knows that Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. And that's why very intelligently he wants to destroy the Supreme Lord, although it's a wish, it's a fantasy. But the point is, although he's against the Supreme Lord, he's not against the Vedic culture, because Vedic culture teaches you that Vishnu is the source of everything. So what happens to Hiranyakashipu, what happens to Ravan, who envy the Supreme Lord but who accept the Vedic culture? They don't accept the summum bonum, the conclusion of the Vedic literature, but they accept the Vedic literature, they accept the knowledge of the Vedic literature. That's why they want to destroy the Supreme Lord, Lord Vishnu. What happens to them is, they get killed by the Lord and they get liberation. They go beyond Janma Mrityu, Jara Vyadi, which big yogis and big rishis are trying to get. So when you are envious of the Supreme Lord, you get killed by the Supreme Lord, in one sense you get rewarded. From another perspective, it's not a good example, but still. But what happens to those who are envious of the devotees of the Supreme Lord? There is no liberation for them. They get cast into the lower regions of existence, where there is no culture, where there is no understanding, where there is no knowledge, and it is just a question of survival, where people are just hunting for each other. What a sad story. So if you read the situation, we talked about Hiranyakashipu, we talked about Ravan, and then we want to talk about Shishupal. These are the three main people in three incarnations of the Supreme Lord, Paravastha forms of the Supreme Lord, who were envious of the Supreme Lord. So we saw what happened to Hiranyakashipu, he got killed. And we saw what happened to Ravan, he also got killed. And what happened to Shishupal? So if we read the Bhagavatam, then Bhagavatam mentions this. Shishupal is speaking such ill things about Lord Krishna. He is talking how this Lord Krishna is a totally uncultured person. He does not follow family rules. He does not follow basic culture. And he does not have a proper caste. He does not have a proper family. And he is like a low person. He is just accusing in front of that whole Agra Puja is being offered in Rajasui Yagya of King Yudhishthir. And he's speaking all kinds of blasphemous things about Krishna. And at the end he also says, look at his whole family of devotees. They stay in Dwarka and they are basically drunkards. Very sad to hear all this. But then he's saying there is this liquor there always in Dwarka and his whole family is uncultured. And this is the kind of words that Shishupal is speaking. And hearing these words about his family, everyone is getting, some people just get up and leave. And the Pandavas and the Matsya clan and the Kaikaya clan and the Srinjaya clan, these four groups of people, it is just too much for them to hear this. They take out their swords and they are ready to attack Shishupal for speaking these blasphemous words against Lord Krishna. What does Lord Krishna do? Lord Krishna stops them. Now as the Pandavas, the Matsyas, the Kaikayas and the Srinjayas, they take out their sword to hurt Shishupal. Shishupal also takes out a sword. And with a sword in hand, he starts blaspheming these devotees who stood up unable to hear the blasphemy of the Supreme Lord. And with a sword in hand, he is threatening these devotees, not Krishna. And he is hurling abuses now at these devotees, not Krishna. Now the topic of his blasphemy has changed. And if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned, Lord Krishna stopped these devotees. And it is mentioned in the shloka, Rusha. Rusha means anger. And he angrily threw his Sudarshan Chakra at Shishupal and decapitated him. He cut off his head. But when did Krishna cut off the head of Shishupal? Not when Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna. So much blasphemy was going on. Krishna was not hurt by the blasphemy that was coming to him. If you read that section of the Bhagavatam, it is when he started blaspheming the devotees of Lord Krishna. In the Rangabhumi in Mathura, Krishna is fighting with Chanur and Mushtik, Balram also. And then they kill. And then Shala, Toshala, you know, the brothers of Chanur and Mushtik attack. Krishna and Balram kill them also. And when all these big, big mountain-like wrestlers are killed, then Kamsa, who's sitting on a throne up there, he becomes disturbed and he sees, whoosh, you know, everyone I thought will kill Krishna, Balram is killed, Kuvalayapid was there, Kuvalayapid was killed. Now what do I do? So he becomes restless. It is said a flame in its last moments, till the candle is there, the flame burns very nicely. As the candle begins to extinguish, the last few moments of the candle flame, the candle flickers a lot. Akhri kshan jab aata hai, to vyakti til mila jata hai. So this Kamsa who is sitting on the throne, he becomes restless and he says, you know, he's not able to control himself. He says, Vasudev and Devaki, they are in the prison, kill them. Ugrasen Maharaj, kill him. And Nanda and all the cowherd men who have come here with Krishna, kill them, snatch away their property, make them beggars. This is the turning point for the death of Kamsa. How long has been Kamsa trying to kill Krishna and Balaram? From Putana, 6 months age. 6 months age to now, his age is roughly 11 and a half years. For 10 and a half years, something like that, daily Kamsa has been trying to kill Krishna. What did Krishna do? Krishna just broke the toys that Kamsa was sending. He never ever planned to kill Kamsa. When did Krishna go to Mathura? Not when Krishna wanted to kill Kamsa. Kamsa invited him for a wrestling match. So Krishna is saying, no problem. You want to attack me? You want to kill me? No problem. This is very normal. Sometimes a son becomes envious of his father. Sometimes a son becomes angry on his mother. That's okay. But Kamsa called him to Mathura. Okay. No problem. He goes there. Chanur and Mushtik, Kuvalayapid, he kills them. When is the turning point when Krishna says enough is enough? When Vasudev and Devaki are threatened. When Nanda Maharaj's property will be snatched away and probably he will be harmed. Krishna says, this is your end. Your end does not come when you wish my end. Your end comes when you wish my devotee's end. And Krishna jumps, pulls Kamsa on the ground and smashes his chest. So that's why we have to be very careful the way we deal with Krishna. We have to understand all these stories from Krishna Leela and we can understand that this is the Krishna whom we are dealing with. And we have to be very careful. We had one story of Paundrak Vasudev also, who is an example of a useless Kshatriya. He is also a cousin of Krishna. But what does he say? He writes a letter to Krishna and he says, you are a false Vasudev, you are a false lord. Give up your weapons, your chakra and all other weapons and you come and surrender to me. Otherwise I challenge you to a fight. And when this letter comes to Ugrasen Maharaj's Raja Sabha, all the people who are sitting in Dwarka in that Raja Sabha, they have a hearty laugh. Krishna also has a laugh and Krishna says to the messenger, you tell him, I will meet him on the battlefield, I will kill him and make his body fit food for vultures, dogs and jackals. Go and tell him that. And then this false Vasudev, Paundrak Vasudev, he actually comes to the war thinking that he is a big Vasudev and he gets killed by Krishna. And in this way, the false Kshatriyas are put to rest by Krishna and the real Kshatriyas like Arjun are promoted by Krishna. The false Brahmanas like Sringi, Roma Harshan, they are put to rest by Krishna and real Brahmanas like Brihaspati are protected by Lord Krishna. So in this way, Lord Krishna is a very broad-minded person. Lord Krishna has to deal with people who love him. Lord Krishna has to deal with people who are envious of him. Lord Krishna has to deal with people who want to kill him. Lord Krishna has to deal with people who want to kill his devotees. But when we go deeper into Krishna Leela and when we try to understand the different stories, how Krishna deals with everyone, then we will learn the art of always upgrading ourselves in our consciousness and always to the best of our small limited ability act in the best possible way and save ourselves from trouble. And in our sincerity offer our prayers to our Guru Shishya Parampara, Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual masters and Sri Radha Gopinath, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityanand.
that please always keep us in the mood of servant, of servant, of servant, of your servants. There will be mistakes, but whenever there are mistakes, we are ready to beg for forgiveness. We are ready to accept and be willing to rectify ourselves. And in this way, slowly, we have a chance to improve. And in this way, in a manner which is anukul for Krishna, in a manner which is anukul for our acharyas, become a humble servant. So with these few words, we stop this class. If we have spoken anything beyond our realization, please forgive us. But these are few thoughts that we thought we could present in connection with this shloka. Jai Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnav Vrinda ki jai. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Thank you.